Good morning, good day, or good evening, whenever and wherever you are listening from. My name is Kevin Fukunaga, and you've joined the Scripps and Scribes Social. Thanks for being our quarantine companion. We know it's tough out there, so we're happy you joined us today. And today, we'll be chatting with a TV writer who has worked at every level of TV support staff on shows such as Sleepy Hollow, Krypton, Gossip Girl, and many others you've heard of. Welcome to the show, Amy Thurlow. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, first off, I just want to ask, how are you handling the self-isolation of this whole coronavirus thing?
I feel like it's 50-50. I'm like half really excited to like have more space and time to like write and bake and like clean and organize stuff and like get to projects that I've never had time to do. And I'm half like totally panicking and like hoping that it all ends soon and missing my friends and missing like seeing people in person and like going to the store and stuff like that. But overall, I think like I feel really fortunate. I live with two other women who are also in the business, and like we all kind of have the same viewpoint on it, which I think has been very, very helpful. And like I feel really safe and good where we are. So that's good.
Well, yeah, that's good, because I know some people live alone, and or some people have roommates that when you spend too much time together, it can be stressful as well. So
yeah.
It's good that you guys are all getting along.
Yeah, I'm really glad we're all like on the same page and are sort of in a peaceful thing. I'm sure that they're both going to hate me by the end of this. But at least for now, we're having, as good a time as we can, and like taking the dog on walks and stuff like that. So trying to stay sane.
Right. Now, for those who are maybe less familiar with the roles within a television production / writer's office, the support staff is a number of different roles, all who have different jobs and assignments, starting with a writer's PA and then sort of branching off to script coordinator, showrunner's assistant, and writer's assistant. And I know you've been all of those, really. Can you maybe mm-hmm. talk us through the different roles and how much, what their responsibilities are, and then how much sort of interaction you have with the staff themselves, and what, if at all, the transition process is like? Because I know for obviously a writer's assistant, it's a much clearer path because you're in the writer's room a lot, whereas a writer's PA is further removed, as well as script coordinator. Even though it's a really important job, you're obviously doing a lot of other really important tasks away from the writer's room. So maybe you can describe it one by one, what those roles entail.
Sure. So writer's PA is like the first level of the support staff, and they're basically there to support the writers. I mean, all the jobs are there to support the writers, but they support the writers in terms of making sure that they have lunch. Like most places, most shows get like lunch every day so that they save a lot of time. So they're mostly in charge of that. They're mostly like an office manager. They make sure that like the show has all the supplies and food that they need. They also handle like a lot of printing of scripts and distributing them to the writers in the office, and just sort of like odds and ends tasks of like, oh, we want it. Like I used to work for a showrunner that like loved buying lottery tickets for everyone. So like that would be something that the writer's PA would go out and do, or like sometimes they do cocktail hours and like the writer's PA would go out and get all the cocktails and like organize that stuff. And they also fill in and help the other support staff, which is also like really key, because it not only gets them in the writer's office, but sort of starts to get them trained on the next like levels of where they might end up. So when I was a writer's PA, like that's when I learned how to script coordinate. I like sat with the script coordinators that I worked with, and I learned from them what they did. And then I filled in a couple times for people that were out or sick. And also with writer's assistant, I also like filled in or acted as a second writer's assistant if the room broke into two. And also with the showrunner's assistant as well, I like would step in and help doing that also. So it's like a great, it's like a great entry level. And it's also like any job in the writer's room is really good because it's ultimately all about connections. And so you're sort of building those relationships and like fostering them. And basically like a lot of the people that I worked with as the writer's PA, like I'm still working with, and like, I still see on a regular basis, and like, I still get pulled onto their shows. And so those are really important relationships. So then the next one is showrunner's assistant. So the showrunner's assistant handles all of the like scheduling and sort of stuff for the, showrunner, which might be personal stuff. It mostly is going to be stuff with the show. Some writers though, you know, will throw in personal stuff. But it's basically like taking care of the showrunner and making sure that their day is made easy. And it's also sort of like, you're a buffer, like as with many other assistants, like you're a buffer for like all the incoming stuff from production or from the studio or the network to the showrunner. So you sort of have to like be able to know like when something's really urgent, when to pull your boss out of the room, or like you sort of have to be smart about it and like understand like how the show works. So that's also like a really great position, because not only are you like really close generally with the showrunner, who's the person that can promote you, but you're also like really understanding what the showrunner does and like how each thing fits into the show, whether it's production or casting or costumes, like all of those different departments all look to the showrunner. And so you're really a vital role. And also it's just like a great learning, like they're all great learning opportunities for how TV works. So that's that one. And then script coordinator is like, basically I call it like a copy editor, but for scripts. Because you're responsible for proofreading, but I actually think the proofreading, even though everyone else, like that's the thing that they see, it's actually not the most important part about that job. The most important part about that job is making sure the script is ready for production and whoever might have their eyes on it, and also distributing it to the correct people. So you're sort of like the gatekeeper of the script, and you work really hand in hand with the showrunner to make all those last minute edits, make sure that the script is exactly what the writer intends, and then distributing it to the correct people. So that's kind of what that one does. And that also like has its own benefits, because you see like in real time what has to change and like what passes, like what notes they take, how the notes affect it. Like you get sort of all that from draft to draft in a really like real way. And then the last one is writer's assistant, which is like the crown jewel of the support staff positions. And that's because you're in the room full time. So you're in the room, you're in the trenches with the writers, you're watching them break story. You sometimes get to help them break story, which is amazing. And you're basically taking notes. And it's like, it seems like it's easy to take notes, but it actually requires a real understanding of breaking story, because you have to organize those notes for the writers in a way that is most helpful. So you're making like beat sheets kind of for them, not beat sheets in terms of like you're writing them beat sheets, but like beat sheets in terms of like making sure each beat that was talked about in the room has all the notes behind it, and like stuff like that, really preparing each writer to be able to go off and write their episode and be able to remember all of those things that are talked about in the room, which is like a lot of stuff.
Right.
So yeah, those are all the roles.
And so how did you land your first job as a writer's PA? Like, how did you learn about it, and what was that process like of actually getting your first gig as a writer's PA somewhere?
So I forget how I learned about it. I knew pretty quickly that I wanted to be in TV. I originally kind of wanted to direct features. When I went to film school, and I graduated and was like, oh, I want to direct features. But at the time, it wasn't really like very, very few features were getting made. The features that were getting made were big blockbusters and they weren't really exciting to me. And I sort of was like, wait, so I'm going to spend like all of my life like climbing and like struggling to be able to do something. And then like I may not even be able to do something that creative or interesting to me. And so I sort of switched paths into TV and realized that. I mean, first of all, I discovered that I was a writer, which it was one of those things where like you always know it's true, but you don't quite believe it. And so I like always knew I was good at writing, but I was really intimidated by it. And was like, that seems very, very hard. Why am I gonna do this? And then I sort of was like, well, I'm not gonna be able to direct anything unless I write the hell out of it, and I want to be able to write the hell out of it. And so then I sort of figured out that I love writing and I love being creative in that way, and that I totally am capable of doing it. And then once I figured that out, I was like, all right, like I want to get into TV and I want to be part of the writer's room. So I basically like networked and networked and networked, and one of my really good friends, his girlfriend at the time was Sarah Tarkoff, who I don't know if you know her, but she's an amazing writer. And she's on Arrow, or she was on Arrow, and she's also written some books. And she liked me and put me up for the job on Gossip Girl, which was like in its second, it was like mid coming in mid season at the last penultimate season, and then I was on the final season. And yeah, I was working at a VFX company that did 2D to 3D animation, or sorry, not animation, but stereoscopic work, like conversion work from 2D to 3D. And it was not for me, and I was like desperately trying to get out, and I got this interview for Gossip Girl, and I did my damnedest and I got the job. And then that was I won't say that was it, because you know it was a struggle after that, but it did help me. Like I then was and I then started to have like a network of writers, and like I also people knew that I had done the writer's PA thing, and so I was able to go from there onto Wishes of East End, also with Sarah. And then from there, like the rest is sort of history in terms of that I was able to like keep getting work and was eventually able to get promoted to script coordinator because I'd already trained when I was a writer's PA to do it. So when someone left mid-season at Sleepy Hollow, I was able to be like, oh, hey, I like have done that job, and they were super, super nice and were like really trusting of me and believed in me. And they were like, we're gonna let you do it, and it worked. So, yeah. Anyway, sorry. I feel like I forgot the question.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's always great to hear your journey, writers' journeys in detail, because obviously that's an important part. What would you say, having done all the different jobs, the roles, what is the most important thing you've taken away from the support staff roles, just sort of as a whole, that you feel will benefit you as a writer?
Oh gosh, that's a hard one. I would say probably like that it's sort of about respecting the process and like truly being supportive of it. Like things get crazy on every show, And I feel like I see a lot of support staff who, when things get crazy, they just sort of like roll their eyes and think they could do better. And the reality is it's a really, really hard job. And like, it's hard at every level. Certainly it's probably the most difficult at showrunners level. They have a million things to do at once. And like a lot of them are really, really smart people and really, really capable people who are just so overloaded. And so I think it's like, you have to have the ability to be like, even if you don't think that things are being done in the right way, that you can still be supportive of the show and like understand and be empathetic that it's a really, really hard process, and just try to learn from everything. And like, don't, like, I feel like I see a lot of people that don't think that they can learn stuff. And it's like, for me, it's like, I learn something new in every single room I'm in. And like, it's a different process on every show, and different shows break story in different ways or handle notes in different ways. And like, some of those ways are better than others. And like, those are all sort of things that you should be collecting and like being a fly on the wall and helping grow. And certainly when you are supportive of the process and like are in it as a team, then like other people that you work with see that and they're say, I want to work with Amy because she's a team player. And I think that that happens a lot. And it's something to like really try to like pay attention to, and will help you in your like in your journeys.
What, again, having been on a number of different shows, from when you were a film school graduate wanting to be a feature director and then transitioning to writing to now, and having, again, spent a number of seasons on different shows through the whole process and being a writer yourself, what was the biggest surprise? Like, what thing surprised you the most that you didn't know or that you had a misconception about in terms of being a professional writer in television?
I think probably just how hard it is, and like how like there's so much luck involved, but people don't really like own up to it because everyone wants to say like, oh, I got to where I am because I'm so good at what I do. Which like certainly people are that way,
sure.
But a huge amount of it is also like, is just luck. I mean, for me, it was like, I've seen that I was able to get that writer's PA job, but I'm not any more or less qualified than other people I know that have been trying to get writer's PA jobs for years and years and just never got one. And like, I think, that when I was graduating, I thought that like, if I just sort of pushed through, and if I sacrificed, and if I gave everything I could to my career, that it would like skyrocket. And the reality is like, you just have to live a more balanced lifestyle, and like, work is important, but you can't put work above everything else in your life. Because ultimately, like, so much of it is about luck, and you don't have control over that. And so it's better to live a more balanced life and like still really focus on your writing, and like, don't be one of those writers that doesn't actually write when they say they're going to. But also, like, I think there's a lot of people, and I was this myself, who really found pride in like, oh, I'm gonna pull an all-nighter to like finish this script, and like, I'm gonna work all weekend on it, and I'm never gonna see anyone, and like that kind of stuff. And I think that that attitude ultimately is not helpful and doesn't like leads to more disappointment when things don't go your way, but also like breeds like some of the toxic behavior that we see in some of these writers' rooms, where people are being held until midnight, even though, you know, they're ahead of schedule, and like stuff like that, where it's just like, everyone needs to live their lives. And it really makes you be a better writer if you have more life experience and you have a more balanced worldview. But all that said, that does not mean like that you don't have to write.
Right.
You have to write. So.
And I think that's a big thing as well. You think that in terms of what you've learned working in a writer's room, whether it's as a writer's PA or writer's assistant, script coordinator, that being a writer in television is not this isolated thing where you just go off, okay, you're going to write episode four, go off and write it and then bring it back. There's so many different steps. There's
Yeah.
so much collaboration. There's writing at in the middle of the night because, you know, you're staying late because something changed because an executive said that or you lost a location, or an executive said, I want to add this character or whatever, or this actor has to change their schedule because they're going to be in a feature and they have to adjust things. And so you're there at, you know, 11 p.m. scrambling because they're going to shoot something the next morning and you've got to get pages out. It's not the ideal writing situation that you think it is. You can just sit there and write at your leisure. A lot of things,
Yeah.
you know, are not ideal, and yet you have to make them work somehow, because it's been described to me, and I think appropriately, as a train. A train is moving and you've
Yeah.
got to keep working because the train's not going to stop for you because you're not feeling it or whatever that
Yeah,
day. The train is moving
absolutely.
whether you wanted to or not. So yeah, that's something that I think that you specifically, but also people who have worked in rooms, learn that I think a lot of newer writers who haven't experienced it yet may not yet understand or know. That's not to say they couldn't do it. I'm just saying that those
Totally.
are sort of misconceptions, that it's like, okay, we're gonna have 10 writers, we're just gonna divide up the episodes and then come back and then hand our things in and we'll go shoot it. It doesn't really work that way,
No,
ever.
it doesn't. It pretty much never works that way. I mean, there's like a few things that I've heard about where, like, usually on super high profile, like, things, sometimes they will just only hire, freelancers, but generally, like, it is all, you're all in it together, you're all breaking story, and you're all sort of like in the trenches together.
Right.
And I think that's where like a lot of that you do have to like not have an ego, and I think some of the like you still have to write part of it is that like you really have to be a very, very strong writer to be able to do that. And so if you've only written like one pilot or one feature, like you're not quite ready. And like I think that's a lot of like people want to think like, oh, I can write like one good sample and I'll be ready to do it. And it's like, no, you really have to be able to write a lot of good samples, and like you need to be able to write under pressure, and it's just a different environment. And the other thing is, I think that I didn't realize too, is like people get hired for vastly different skills, and like
Right.
not everyone is good on the page. There are people that are really, really good pitchers, and like they come in and they know story structure, they can break a story, they can help get those moments, but they're not actually good at scene work. And that's okay too, because the showrunner balances their room out. And so, and that's part of the team thing too, of like you're not in direct competition with anyone because you all have bring different skill sets and different worldviews. And like the whole goal is for you to all work together to be able to make the best show possible. And it really isn't like one person goes off and writes their episode and they've written, the best episode, and like all that kind of stuff is not really what it is.
Right. No, that's a great description of it. And there's always the inevitable question of, in different variations, of course, what is your superpower as a writer when you're meeting with a showrunner? Like, what are you bringing to the table that's different? Because at this point, if they're meeting with you, at least they think you're a good writer. There are always a couple writers in the room who are the best writers, meaning their writing is the strongest, but it doesn't mean that they're all good writers. And but like you said, they all bring different skill sets. Some are problem solvers, some are story structure people. There may even be a writer in there, depending on the size of the room, who the showrunner trusts to be their eyes and ears on set. That could be one of them as well. I mean,
Oh, totally.
so, but you make a great point about it not about being writing under pressure is still one of those really, really important things. And if you've written one thing, that's difficult for anyone to determine whether or not that that's one of your skill sets or experiences or something that you would be good at. So yeah, you make a good point there. Now, I wanted to, we talked about always writing, and I think that's sort of very important because obviously in a situation when you're on a television series, that the moving train, so to speak, you don't often have the luxury of writing when it feels right. You just have to keep writing. But for you, especially in this current climate, how do you stay motivated? How do you stay creative during this isolated process? And you had mentioned that, you know, having more free time to do it is sort of energizing, but at the same time, I'm sure not having a release as much, you know, being able to meet friends for dinner or whatever it happens to be, whatever your release happens to be, how are you able to stay creative and stay productive during this social distancing, the self-isolation quarantine thing?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, to be honest, I haven't been that productive because I find this whole situation so jarring. And I also just was coming off of a show as a writer's assistant. And we moved to Zoom, or actually, we didn't do Zoom. We used Google Hangouts for a
Oh,
little
okay.
bit, and then we mostly did phone calls. And so that was it, truly. It's exhausting. I'm so happy and grateful and glad that writers' rooms are still going on despite all of this stuff and that we are able to work remotely. That said, it is not the best. It's surprisingly more efficient, I think, than people thought it would be, in that like my roommate is a writer on a show, and she said they broke an episode this week, no problem. So, and our show was sort of wrapping up, so we were mostly doing like fixes for certain drafts and stuff like that. And it has worked, and we were able to get that stuff done. As a writer's assistant, though, it's more exhausting, I think, than normally. I think part of that is it's a little bit more difficult to hear people when they're speaking. Yeah, so basically, I am really looking forward to this week because this will be my first week where I'm not working, and I'll really be able to drill down and start to dig in. But it's also been a huge adjustment, just like emotionally, in terms of everything that's going on. And I feel like I haven't been able to use my writing as an escape yet, because every time I sit down, I mean, I think it also doesn't help that I am working on like a horror thing, and then I was working on a more comedic thing, and I sort of was like, I don't, I'm not in a place where I feel like cracking jokes. But I also don't really want to dig into this horror thing either. The project that I'm working on. So it's been a little bit of a challenge, but I am planning on sort of. Someone actually sent me a thing for this thing called The Cave, which I might try to do, which is sort of like it's set up, it's like remote work sessions, and it's like guided by someone, and you sort of like have to, like, it's like a 3-hour chunk, and you're supposed to get a bunch done in that chunk of time. And I think I might try to test that out and see if that works. But I also tend to be a person that will, I sort of, I'm like a binge writer where I like will obsessively write for an extended period of time, and then I will like take a long break. And so I feel very ready to like get into, especially coming off this show, just because it was a like I came in mid-season to help this show as a writer's assistant, and it was a 5-week job, and it was like the first 3 or 4 weeks were really, really intense. And then it was sort of like I sort of started to get my footing and was trying to get back into more of a schedule. And then as that happened, the coronavirus thing happened, and then it was sort of like, oh, okay, like now this is overwhelming. But yeah, I'm basically like looking forward to trying that cave thing and just sort of setting aside time. I tend to be also like a 9-to-5-er sort of person where I really like setting aside my whole day when I'm gonna write. And I also am thinking of doing the artist way. But I haven't had like a ton of success with the artist way, mostly because I start it and then stop it. and don't follow through with it. But I'm thinking now that things are like that I have so much more time that I'm gonna like try and be more routine about stuff. But yeah.
What is the artist's way? I'm not familiar with it.
The Artist Way is a book by, I think it's Julia Cameron. And it's sort of like a set of guidelines. It's like a weekly workbook type thing where it's supposed to help you. It's supposed to help with any, it's like not just writing, it's anything. And it's supposed to help you like get in touch with your creativity and sort of tap into that and like be more inspired. And some of that, actually, now that I think of it, some of it is going to be totally off limits, but it would be interesting to see how to adapt some of them, because like one of them is you're supposed to take yourself on dates, and like you're supposed to go take yourself to like an art museum and like go and be out and be inspired. But I'm sort of like, well, it would be interesting now that I saw that even Versailles is doing digital tours. There's like all these different museums are doing digital tours. Like maybe instead of physically going, that I'll do a digital tour of those places and like try to get around some of those restrictions that we have now.
And we're gonna have all these links in the video, or I mean, excuse me, the podcast description. So if you're interested in any of this stuff, we'll make sure we get links for you guys. Now, talking about restrictions, when before this outbreak happened, were you the type to write primarily from home or coffee shops? I'm assuming you mostly, as when you're doing support staff stuff, you don't really have time to do it at work, probably necessarily very much. But so where did you do spend most of your writing time?
Yeah, I am mourning a little bit. I used to go before work. I would get up early and I would go to my local coffee shop. And it's like an outdoor coffee shop, and I would sit outside and like work there. That is obviously not something I can do anymore. I'm fortunate that we have like a garage space that has a whiteboard in it, and so I've spent a lot of time like breaking story in the garage, which is what I will be doing now. But yeah, and I don't know. I used to also like do sort of like writing dates with friends where we would go and hang out and just write together at different coffee shops, or even like I think I've done it at like hotel lobbies before. I used to go to the Line all the time, in Koreatown, and like hang out in their beautiful lobby. Yeah, so I'm a little sad. I also got a membership to a co-working space, but I so random. I like went to this event and they gave it to me for free, and they gave me a year free like co-working space at this place called the Room Service, or Room Service at Beverly Center. And I loved working there. And I was, when they gave it to me, I was like, you don't understand who you're giving this to. Like, I'm a writer. I will use this, because it was at this event where like a bunch of other people were like had jobs where they don't necessarily work from home or need that time. And like, for me, I was like so excited. So I'm certainly sad those places are gone, but I'm hoping that this will forced me to sort of figure out ways to work at home more efficiently, because certainly I've tried to work on stuff late at night at home a bunch, and like with varying degrees of success. Because really, like getting up early and going to the coffee shop is when I'm most productive. So I'm gonna have to figure out how to recreate that for my headspace at home.
Right. For the very beginning of your day, you've got to get like go into your kitchen, have one of your roommates pretend to be a barista, give you a cup of coffee, you can sit down in the living room and just pretend like you're at a coffee shop, visualize.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's definitely what it's gonna have to be like. It's gonna be like, okay, I've got my coffee,
Right.
like sitting down.
Turn on the YouTube or something in the background to have like ambient noise of street noise or people or birds or something, and get in that headspace.
Exactly.
What tips do you have for procrastination? What helps get you sort of in gear to write when you're stalling, like we all do?
Oh yeah, I am a huge staller. I had to install oh gosh, I forget what it is, but I'll send it to you so that you have it if you're not already familiar with it, and the links and stuff. But I had to get software that turns off the internet pretty much, so that I cannot, because I have a like I will compulsively, even before all this started happening, I'm a compulsive news checker, and also like there's a couple other websites that I'll compulsively look at, usually like Deadline and like LA Times, where I just will keep going to that site instead of working on my desk.
No, I
So
understand.
I just had to like be like, all right, when I'm writing, the internet is pretty much shut down, which I still have my phone. So like if I need to Google something, then I can Google through my phone. But sometimes I also leave my phone in another room, because there's just all these devices that have so much information and can distract you and pull you out. And like the other thing is text messages, which I, when I'm working, like especially if, when I'm a script coordinator, I feel like there's not really a time when I can totally not have my phone, because even on the weekends there might be something urgent. But generally, when I'm not working or when I'm not in the script coordinator role, then I try to like keep the phone away sometimes. And yeah, mostly for me too, it was like it really has been getting out of the house, so this is gonna be hard. But I'm determined to do it, and I'm sure a lot of writers feel like this, but it really does feel like, okay, there's like no excuse now to like not get a bunch of stuff done. And like, I think we all should, but it's also sort of like, if you don't get a bunch of stuff done, don't feel guilty. This is such an unprecedented thing that we're going through. And like ultimately too, I started to think about like the world, I think, will change after this. And I sort of wonder to what extent what we were working on will still stay relevant. And so I think that's something to keep in mind too, is like maybe this is a time to start a new project, because our worldviews are going to be slightly different than when before all this started happening. Not to say that we won't still want romantic comedies and like all sorts of other stuff, and that the world won't return to hugging. I'm sure it will. But it's something to keep in mind, I guess.
Yeah, I hadn't even considered. I saw somebody mention it on Twitter. I don't remember 100% who it was, but it was the first time that I had considered it. They had asked genuine question of what do you all think that this, the coronavirus outbreak and the effects that it's having on the world, how will that, will it, and how will it affect writing and storytelling going forward? And it was a genuine question. I had never considered it, but that's something definitely, like you had mentioned, to keep in mind and to consider. I don't know what effect it will have personally. But yeah, I mean, like you
No.
said, this is a profound change in the way we've been living. The effects will be far-reaching, both socially, in terms of individuals and their health and people, the losses of life, but
Yeah.
also economically and socially. Because even if it doesn't touch you in that
Yeah.
sense, like you don't know someone who directly, you don't know someone who has gotten it, or who will get it, or you lose someone potentially in your life. Economically, the impacts will be widespread and profound throughout not just your city and not just our country, but around the world. So, yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, there will be some sort of lasting reverberations, impact from this. But how will that affect storytelling going forward? I mean, I have no idea. That's a good question.
No, yeah, I don't think any of us know what will happen. I think it's also like it's going to be vastly different if things happen faster or happen slower. And so, like, if this is only a couple weeks, then it will change us, but not quite drastically, but as drastically. But if this is, as some of the experts are saying, a year to 18 months, then this will profoundly change everything.
Sure.
Like our whole way of life and our ways of connection will be totally different. So we'll see. I'm sort of waiting to see how Hollywood reacts. And I kind of think they don't really know. I mean, some of it they've already reacted, but like I think we won't really know how things are gonna work for at least a couple months in terms of like will production start coming back? Like, will they be able to, I don't know. I mean, I was thinking like maybe they'll be able to secure tests and then they'll just test everyone that's on a film set or do really small sets and like just only work on stages and stuff like that. But even that will change the stories that we're telling.
Yeah, exactly.
So
Yeah.
yeah, it's really like it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But at the end of the day, I feel like whatever stories we're telling or change or however they're changing, they'll still be about humanity and the skills and the things that we are working towards as TV writers, I think will still be totally relevant and perhaps more relevant than ever.
Right, absolutely. And how it affects features as well, because movie
Oh
theater
yeah.
chains, I mean, when will they open again? And how will
Oh
that
yeah.
work? I know in
Yeah.
Taiwan and in Singapore, places that have it more under control, even though they're so close to China, there are people, security guards, at pretty much every public space, every building, and they have those little thermometers and they scan every person. And if you have a fever, you can't come in, kind of thing. And is that the future for movie
Wow.
theaters, at least until we develop a vaccine and things like that? I mean, you could have your temperature checked every time you enter an office building or every time you enter a movie theater or a mall or something like that,
Yeah.
but I mean, what you need to do to keep people safe is obviously the
Yeah.
most important thing. But
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, how that affects storytelling will be interesting.
Yeah, and I just hope, I mean, I just hope that movie theaters will make it through this. And I think they will. I guess I feel like maybe what will happen is studios will have to take them over because like the global box office is still such a huge amount of money that even if it's decimated for 1 year, I can't imagine that they're gonna like throw away the infinite possibilities over it. So they may be able to step in, but then that's a whole ball of worms, which like I don't really understand. I'm sure you know feature distribution much better than I do, having worked in features. But I don't understand how you could have studios do that, even though it would be in their best interest, because no one's going to want to go to one theater that only is showing stuff from Disney and
Right.
another theater that's only showing stuff from Universal. So,
Well,
but maybe they'll.
I think part of the part of the problem in the past, which is why when the studio system existed and studios did own the theater chains, which is why they were broken up, is exactly what you had said, that they would show their movies and their movies only. But now studios all, and the challenge would be not necessarily for Universal or Fox or, well, actually, Disney slash Fox, or Warner Brothers. They all are massive studios, and they would all buy their own theater chain, so that would be what it is. But the danger in the past would have been when there were a bunch of independent film studios. How do they compete for space in theaters? But now basically every major studio has an independent film arm, so that would obviously change that. And there's many different distribution methods now, whether it's streaming or online, like through via YouTube selling. You can buy a movie on YouTube. So it's not necessarily the same as it was in the past, where if an independent film didn't get into a theater or a smaller film didn't get into a theater, you would never ever hear about it, and it would just show up on VHS or something, DVD, I don't know. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if those rules would be relaxed, because I know there's those antitrust laws of you can't own, the distribution and release, the production distribution, that whole chain was part of the issue. But yeah, I mean, to see them to how they're going to survive, I think, is the most important thing. But with theaters, there's a physical property there, and I think people will return to see movies. It's just who will own those theaters, because they're not going away right away. There's actual movie theaters in place there that somebody will take over at some point. It's just who will it be? Will the theater chains survive? Will, like you said, the studios take over? Will somebody else come in, like Jeff Bezos, Amazon Presents, the
Oh,
movies? I
that's
mean, who
totally
knows?
possible.
It'll be definitely interesting.
Well, and maybe, I mean, this is maybe pie in the sky, but it would be pretty awesome if there ended up being more independent movie theaters.
Oh yeah.
If people just buy the theaters, if AMC or Cinemark were to go totally bankrupt.
Right. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So what other fun things, talking about the outbreak, what other fun things are you doing? Going outside, keeping active, how are you keeping active and mentally and physically fit during this time?
I mean, I don't know if I'm keeping mentally or physically fit.
Me either. I'm just, if you had any tips, I'm not either, really.
but I'm here. I feel like I feel like the first, I don't know, 5 days of this thing, 6 days, I don't even know how long it's been, to be honest. I feel like at first was just trying to survive, and now I'm like into the point where I'm like, okay, I feel like I've adjusted a little more, and like I'm gonna be able to have more of a routine and a schedule. I don't know. I did wine and Nick Cage night with my friends last night over Zoom.
Oh, wow.
So that was fun. I've actually had a fair number of like Zoom hangouts with friends, which I think has been really helpful. I go to like a postcard party to like help get like post it's like post part of postcards to voters to like help drum up support for different elections. And so
Oh.
I moved to a digital party, and so I still did that last week, which was nice. But I'm still trying to like do that, and I'm talking to my family a lot, which is good.
Yeah.
And then just like trying to get outside. I have been like walking. I have a dog, my roommate has a dog, so we've been walking the dogs a lot and like just trying to stay active. And then I am a little bit of a stress organizer. And so
So your
it
house
makes me
is
feel
organized and
good.
spotless.
So I'm trying to get there. It's not quite like that, but I am it does help me feel more relaxed when things are clean and neat. And so I like my closet has been like out of control for months, and I finally was just like the second that this happened, I was like, all right, I'm cleaning the closet. And like, I just put on a podcast and like got to work. And now I'm doing that with the kitchen where I'm trying to reorganize all of our stuff in there and like trying to cook more. And like just try to keep sane. I wrote myself a big to-do list also when this first started because I was like, I immediately saw like, here's going to be a time to get to all those projects that I never have time for. And also, here's a bunch of stuff that I can do that I've like wanted to learn how to do or wanted to do. Like I've wanted to bake bread for like ever. I feel like I'm not alone in this. I feel like I've seen a lot of people baking bread
Yeah.
recently, but I was like, great, I'm gonna like try to bake bread. I'm gonna like try to cook more and like just sort of take care of some of those home things. I got some plants that I'm gonna put that I'm gonna plant in our little backyard and yeah, I am just trying to like stay sane and like do a bunch of stuff. What have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing this a lot. We've been daily,
Yeah.
so I've been
Oh, wow.
doing, yeah. So this is, you're our sixth in a row. I took, well, today is Sunday, which I'm recording this, and I'm going to put this up Monday. So technically, I've got this, and then I'm going to spend time with my family. Been doing walks and things around the neighborhood. That's really
That's
it.
good.
We have a 6-year-old son, so a lot of our day is spent educating him because there's no school and they've given us big packets of
Oh,
stuff to
wow.
work with him on. And then
Oh my
obviously
gosh.
we have to entertain our son because he can't see his friends or he can't have play dates and things like that. So
Yeah.
entertaining a 6-year-old and educating a 6-year-old is a healthy
That's a lot.
amount of time. So
Yeah.
that's pretty much my day.
Oh
That
my
and
gosh.
this and then obviously trying to get some writing done on my own. But yeah, so yeah, I don't have too many therapeutic things going on. You're kept pretty busy when you're a parent of a young child, but
Yeah.
at the same time, like a dog, he's therapeutic. He's a lot of fun to have around. So,
Oh, that's good.
yeah, kind of like a dog in that sense.
Yeah.
What about film, TV? Are you binging anything? Books? Are you reading anything?
I have stayed away kind of from TV a little bit, but I'm still trying to figure out. I have some things that I need to watch. I watched Unbelievable on Netflix, because I'd heard about it a long time ago, but I never actually had watched it, and that was really good. I was very happy to binge it. But yeah, I watched some of Love is Blind,
Yeah, I've
which
heard.
is ridiculous, but entertaining. But yeah, I find that like when I'm gonna be inside all day, I have to be careful about spending too much time binging just
Yeah.
because I know that it doesn't make me feel great. So I try to like, I basically haven't chosen what I'm gonna watch next. And there's been a lot of like, because none of us are able to go out and see our friends, like me and my roommates have been talking about stuff a lot and like sort of using each other as our own social things. And so sometimes I'll be like, oh, I'm gonna get in bed and like watch a show, and then I'll end up talking to my roommate until, midnight. And so, but I think now that things are sort of calming down, and also now that I'm not gonna be working, that's a huge thing, because yeah, like organizing notes and being on the calls and stuff, and it's a lot to do remotely. So now that that's over, I'll definitely get back into more stuff. I haven't watched the second season of Killing Eve, so I'm looking forward to that. And I don't know, I there's a lot of stuff. I want to watch The Leftovers now that everyone's like everyone's like, it's like this. So I already watched Bird Box, which people were saying it's like Bird Box. Yeah.
And to sort of touch base on what you said before, I think in terms of not necessarily feeling pressure to write your King Lear, so to speak, taking the time to do other things or just, come to terms with it. It's for those of you who are super productive during this time period, great for you. Bravo. That's great. That's awesome. But for those of you who may feel stressed or worried because you're not doing that, I think that's okay too. So I hear a lot of writers having that same sort of, I don't want to say dilemma, but having those same feelings and feeling that they just don't feel creative or productive or don't want to. And that's okay too. Because like you said, I mean, who knows what the climate's going to be after this. So if you want to write, write. If you don't, gestate and think about things. Maybe an idea will come, or maybe you'll just, rejuvenate. I mean, who knows? As long as you're taking care of your mental well-being, that's the most important thing. I would say physical too, except I'm not really doing that, so I can't really tell people to do that, although you probably should. So,
Oh yeah, I mean they say like get if you can get in cardio exercise, do try to do it. I'm the worst. I'm such an anomaly. I hate running, but I have done it in the past and have run marathons and stuff. But I every time I it's not that I hate it. It's every time I start it, I hate it. And then it takes a while for me to be like, oh yeah, I love this. And so I forced myself to go on a run, but they really do say like cardio helps keep up your immunity and or your immune system, and like it actually does really, really help your lungs breathe at capacity. So if you can go on a run, do it, or go on a bike ride. But it's honestly, it's the same. It's like whatever you can do, do it. But if you can't do it, that's also fine.
right.
Yeah. I mean, before this too, I was like, I had given up on cardio a little bit and was only doing strength training, and because it was sort of like, well, this is what I feel like I can do right now, and that's fine. Like, it is really like, however you cope with this, as long as you're not harming yourself or others, is fine. Like,
Right.
if you're like my roommate is coping by she just bought an Xbox and is planning to get into video games, and like that is perfectly fine. And like,
I hear that a lot.
it's like all yeah. Yeah, because it's sort of like I think for I mean I'm not a big gamer, but I like gaming. I don't know, so I'm excited to try it too and to get into gaming. And I have a lot of friends that are really into it. Sorry, I feel like I said that in a way that was like negative towards
Not at
gaming, which
all.
is
Not at
like
all.
not what I meant at all.
No, and there's a definitely a
Gaming is
social
awesome,
aspect to it.
but
With the
yeah,
headsets
for
and,
sure.
so, I mean, that's a big part of it. So,
Oh yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like whatever can keep you sane during this totally insane time. Yeah, which I like in a way, yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, I even have no excuse not to do exercise. I have an exercise bike in my home and I don't use it, so I have no zero excuse to
Oh
not do it. I could do it watching TV
yeah.
and I don't know. But what were you gonna say?
The people at Peloton are probably all like cackling, like you thought we were ridiculous when we sent out that ad for Christmas, but now we've,
Right. Now they're
wouldn't it be
shipping them,
nice?
yeah. Yeah, now they're shipping them like
Yeah.
crazy probably.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Oh, I forgot what I was gonna say. It's okay. Probably just something about staying sane.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I was going to ask you what sort of final thoughts or what sort of message would you have though for, those guys listening, for all those writers out there who are listening to this podcast right now, what would you say to them? But I think you said something, very important in that if you want to play video games, that's great. If you want to write, that's great. Whatever it is you do, that's fine. But I will allow give you the floor. What if there's anything you wanted to share, writing or non-writing wise, to those guys listening, to everyone out there?
Sure. I think even if you feel like it's you can't write or it's not the time, I feel like it's probably worthwhile to sit down and try to write for at least a little while, and it can only, you can set a timer and be like, I'm gonna try and write for half an hour or like even 10 minutes, because what you might find is that you think that you can't, but then you sit down and you are able to. And so it is sort of, but I think it's about like not making whether you can or not into like a guilt thing, because I think that's like the whole thing is like we have this societal thing about the King Lear, like this pressure of like you should be able to use this time to do whatever, and that's really not helpful. I think it what's helpful is setting your own goals and checking in with yourself and connecting to what you feel like you can do right now, and like maybe see if you can write for half an hour and see if that turns into 4 hours. And some days you might sit down and not be able to do anything, and that's fine too. I think it is really like we're gonna all come out of this with like PTSD
Right.
and a renewed gratefulness, I think, just for like all the things that we sort of took for granted. And hopefully, I don't know, I'm wishing everyone good health and good health both physically and mentally. And I don't know, I feel like we'll all get through this, and we may be a different world when we get out of it, but we'll still be here. So
There
it's
you
not
go.
the end times. We'll still be
Yeah.
here.
No,
And TV will
absolutely.
still get made. Like
Right.
all this stuff will still get made.
Right.
If anything, now more than ever.
Oh,
Now
absolutely.
that millions of people are sitting at home watching Netflix.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's the funny thing. We talk about movie theaters and their business struggling, obviously, being shut down with all of this. But the streaming services, I read that YouTube and Netflix have had to lower resolution in certain areas just due to over-demand. Their
Yeah.
bandwidth cannot handle how many people. So, and their stock price was one of the few that rose, those streaming services. I'm not talking that that's necessarily a good thing about the stock market. But you can see how the demand is very, very high for a lot of these online services. So yeah, people are definitely still craving entertainment, and it's I think helping get a lot of people through this. So yeah, your point is well
Oh,
taken.
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to everyone listening, as Amy said, remember you're not alone. We are all in this together. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much. This was amazing.
Be well, and we'll see you tomorrow.